life presents us possibilities each and every day. I heard a calling that was right for me. I prayed for strength for what's ahead of me. Stood before me was my enemy.
Don't tread on me.
He's come to take away my liberties. I'd rather die than be a slave to thee.
Don't change me.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and patriots and jackbooted thugs alike. It is again that time. It's the time for the TNT radio show on the Mighty Matters Radio Network, Thursday Night Truth, with your host, Dale the Truth. We got a packed show tonight. It's a very tight show, meaning that it's full of material that we want to kind of squeeze in this 1 hour format. Again, if you want to call in and comment on what we're discussing, the number, as always, nationwide is 858-683-1326. 858-683-1326. The date is Thursday, October the 10th. And we will cover a couple of big Republican stories at first, and we'll go into what was advertised, which is our show dedicated 100% to government police corruption. We just want to take the very top of the hour to talk about good old Senator Addison Mitchell McConnell Jr., better known as Mitch McConnell. And we want to talk about some of the latest information coming out on old Addison Mitchell McConnell Jr. And the first piece of which, he's already losing some of his endorsements that he had. That's right, people who said they were going to endorse Mitch McConnell, even though it seemed like a little premature since the primary for said election is still 6 weeks, or I'm sorry, 6 months away, even though it's 6 months away until the primaries, and it's still a good 3 months away before the filing deadline, people were jumping onto the coattails of a incumbent U.S. senator and a Senate quote-unquote majority leader. You know, he's not really a leader of anything. But the group today called Tea Party Nation has come out. This is just as of an hour ago from the TPM Livewire. The Tea Party Nation has withdrawn its endorsement of Addison Mitchell McConnell Jr. Writing on the group's website, Tea Party Nation founder Justin Phillips referred to the report by Glenn Beck, of course, that described a closed-door meeting in which McConnell said that supporters of FreedomWorks and Senate Conservative Fund were traitors to the Republican Party. Now, this sounds very familiar, doesn't it? And I will try my hardest not to get off track on ripping the local and state neocons who worship at the feet of Addison Mitchell McConnell Jr., but basically, the Tea Party Nation thought that endorsing Mitch McConnell at first was the right thing to do, but now they say he has proven he is not worthy of conservative support. And I totally agree with that. I can't disagree at all. And Justin Phillips, again, Tea Party Nation founder, says it is time to defund the GOP until the GOP pushes people like Mitch McConnell out of leadership, and if they do not, there are always alternatives for conservatives. While the odds still favor Mitch McConnell being reelected to another term in the Senate, he would do so without our support. And he closes out this press release piece to say, given his behavior, there is simply no reason for conservatives to support McConnell. He says, regrettably, there are no good choices in Kentucky in this election. Why? I don't know if I agree with him that there are no good choices. And I don't think this has anything to do with the government shutdown, as some people on the left want to claim. But Glenn Beck had this scoop of a story, if you will, about how Mitch McConnell had said, and I think it bears repeating, that if you are a supporter of FreedomWorks or Senate Conservative Fund, that you are a traitor to the Republican Party. See, those groups have criticized the Republican lawmakers like McConnell over efforts to defund Obamacare. Following up on that story, how about the fact that Mitch McConnell continues to alienate grassroots conservatives? And this is where it all started at before Tea Party Nation withdrew their endorsement. This goes back to with people like Ted Cruz and Tom Graves building momentum to pressure House and Senate Republicans to support a continuing resolution, a CR, that would have defunded Obamacare. And you have these quote-unquote leaders, we use that word very loosely, in the Republican Party, who were hesitant to embrace the idea. And again, remember, Mitch McConnell was lobbying, the term is whipping, and that's not to be confused with anything he likes to do in his personal life, but the term is whipping the Congress into voting against people like Tom Graves, and Ted Cruz. And McConnell created some controversy that could really undermine his leadership role, because back on Monday, the Washington Times first recounted the conversation between McConnell and the RNC chairman, Reince Priebus. And McConnell politely cautioned Mr. Priebus, suggesting that the party chief should not look like he was taking sides in this dispute. Mr. Priebus countered that he saw himself as chairman of the entire party, and he would support any Republicans, including Mr. Cruz, in a battle against Democrats. But McConnell didn't agree with that. McConnell didn't think that you should support these Republicans who are for lesser government. And again, going back to his radio show from Tuesday, and Glenn Beck did have Mitch McConnell's primary opponent, at least one of his primary opponents, Matt Bevin, on his show this week. And on his radio show back on Tuesday, Glenn Beck relayed some of the details of this recent off-record meeting in which McConnell slammed the Senate Republicans' Working Freedom Works. And what has happened, he said, was they're all standing there, and in not too many words, McConnell says that they're on the wrong side. And Beck's source is presumably a Republican senator himself or herself. And the source told Beck that they were disgusted about what happened. And some say the word traitor wasn't actually used, but the word could be translated as traitor. And the one who wanted everyone to know that if you back Ted Cruz, or if you back Freedom Works, or if you back some of these liberty-oriented Republican groups, you are a traitor. And the one who wanted you to know this is Senator Mitch McConnell, back at it. And see, McConnell is staring down a very tough re-election bid. And I know some people want to give Matt Bevin a lot of slack and give Matt Bevin a lot of grief for these ridiculously erroneous ads that McConnell uses big war chest to run. But the bottom line is McConnell does have to worry about Bevin campaigning from the right. And then again, from the left, I guess you could say, he's running neck and neck in polls against Alison Lindgren Grimes, the Kentucky Secretary of State. And don't forget that Mitch McConnell had tried to strengthen his relationship with the Tea Party, supposedly, allegedly, because he hired Jesse Benton, who married into the Ron Paul family and was deeply involved in Ron Paul's presidential campaigns. Well, some people will say Benton was part of the problem with Ron Paul's presidential campaigns, and I, again, can't argue. But Benton also ran Rand Paul's Senate campaign during the 2010 term, which, guess what, relied on support from groups like Freedom Works and the Senate Conservatives Fund. So if these groups are bad, then why did Mitch McConnell hire folks very much tied to them? Because he is doing everything he can, supposedly, to get the votes of conservatives. But to me, it seems like despite the hire, he is doing everything he can to burn the bridges with the grassroots. And what that's going to do is that's going to further alienate them at a time that he should be reaching out and kissing our ass instead of making us have to kick his ass. And that's your Mitch McConnell update. So I promise we'll get away from that now and get back to the stories that I promised for this evening, which is 100% focused on government police corruption. And we'll start out with a story that broke last week while I was on the airwaves, pretty much. And that was a story about Miriam Carey in Washington, D.C., where we had the woman who was an unarmed woman in a vehicle with no government-approved drugs, no government non-approved drugs in the vehicle. She was unarmed. She did have a child in the car, and they did shoot and kill her. And yeah, I've already gotten a lot of grief out on the internet, and we aren't going to name any names, of course, but we got a lot of grief out on the internet from people who just think it's horrible that we stood up against the police on this. But I asked out on the social networks, and I'll ask again on this show, where were the outrage, the marches, and the protests when you have an unarmed, allegedly mentally ill minority woman alone in a car, but for a small child, and then several government employees from various agencies open fire, killing her with semi-automatic or automatic weapons? And then, of course, to add insult to injury, you had the Congress and their very rare bipartisan move, giving a standing ovation to the action, even though they didn't see the videotape yet at the time. Many of them probably still haven't seen the videotape. And we're told, oh, it's not terrorism, so there's nothing to see here. Move right along. There's nothing to worry about here. And the story immediately fell off the news headlines, the news cycles, after one day. And the truth is, if you take a deeper second look at what happened, it's going to cause people to question the level of violence. But they want the government to stand out there and say, keep moving, nothing to see here, keep moving along. And as someone suggested to me on the social networks, what if this woman had been lost and accidentally hit the gas instead of brake, causing her to hit the barricade? When armed men point guns at you, it's going to be a justified panic attempt to flee at that point. I think if you all of a sudden looked up and you have people pointing guns at you, you're going to flee. Sorry, that's the way it is. And yes, I've already had people out there trying to strut their muscle and talk about who they are and how I don't understand what I'm talking about because I haven't worked in law enforcement because I don't know what's going on. I don't know what it's like to be in law enforcement. Well, here's the bottom line. If you're listening out there, here's the bottom line. The mother is still dead, and she apparently needed help with her mental illness, not to be shot to death. And there are thousands of cars on American roads with less than desirable, allegedly questionable actions, but they don't get killed for it, nor do they deserve to. Badges don't grant extra rights. Say it again. Shiny badges don't grant extra rights. And on that note, I go to Ed Krogowski of Reason Magazine. And Reason Magazine is doing some of the best liberty-oriented journalism out there these days, over there with cousin Nick Gillespie, as I call him, running Reason Magazine. And they did a story over there, just came out yesterday, called Who Cares About Miriam Carey? And they go on talking about people want to blame the violent rhetoric of insert your political party here for what had happened here. And attempting to do some damage control before any facts were known, you had Representative Tim Griffin, Republican of Arkansas, excusing his comments by saying he had tweeted out of emotion when he said that Obama and other Democrats were responsible for the shooting. Again, that's what they like to do. Your government killed the woman. So then you have the two branches of your uniparty blaming each other for killing the woman. Makes perfect sense, right? Sure. But the only shooters in the incident, despite the reaction by members of Congress, the only shooters, the only people responsible for the actions were the ones who took the actions. And that was the Capitol Police. Those were the Capitol Police themselves. And again, I'll say it, I'll continue to say it. Miriam Carey, the woman they shot, was unarmed. Police say she tried to ram a barricade, the outer perimeter fence or checkpoint, in front of the White House before speeding off, leading police on a chase. Even Reason Magazine says they chased through Washington, D.C., when it was really a chase just around a couple of blocks. But I guess that's the same as around Washington, D.C., whatever. And how did the District of Columbia's chief of police describe the behavior of cops who shot an unarmed woman to death in front of her one-year-old daughter because she tried to hit a barrier and reportedly knocked over a Secret Service agent with her car? They, quote, acted heroically. Jack Dunphy, an LAPD officer who blogs pseudonymously, said that Carey, quote, was neither a terrorist nor a hardened criminal, before adding that, nevertheless, police couldn't have known that because when she fled from their encounter, rather than drive into a random neighborhood, she drove straight to the Capitol. And again, if you're familiar with the Capitol, would you not drive into the Capitol rather than in some strange neighborhood? Maybe she knew how dangerous the neighborhoods surrounding Washington, D.C. were. Now, remember, they always want to call a vehicle a 3,600-pound weapon. And they say after being shot at, she went skirting the Capitol grounds before getting a block away. So what reasonable officer, asks Dunphy, Jack Dunphy, an LAPD officer, blogging under a name that's not his own. What reasonable officer, he said, would not think a terrorist attack was taking place. After Kerry was shot and killed, a task force, including the FBI and local police in Connecticut, raided the woman's home, began an investigation into the woman they had just killed. And guess what? They were not able to find any nexus to terrorism. So again, we wanted to open up our show tonight that is going to be 100% based on police oppression, brutality, and abuse with the Miriam Carey story. And we're going to go straight to the phone lines, and I believe this is our good friend Paul on the line. Paul, are you with us?
Good evening. How's TNT starting off?
It's great, Paul. We're going to do a whole show here on police brutality and oppression and corruption, and some people don't like us talking about that because they'll say, I don't know what I'm talking about because I haven't been in law enforcement, blah, blah, blah. But the woman's still dead, Paul. What say you?
Well, I got a couple of observations on this whole scene here, Dale. First of all, let me report that today, for the very first time on local radio, I actually heard an ad for a product, a trade name, that I'm trying to find out some more info on it, called Dashcam.
Mm-hmm.
They have a website.
And yeah, I'm very familiar with Dashcam.
I think it's instructive, and I think it's a sign of the times that we now have commercial businesses that have decided that there is a evolving market for such a product. I know that there's many times when you hear these news stories that I'll bet the folks that were involved that got hassled or beat up or worse at the hands of law enforcement, I'll bet they wish they had that product. And I've always thought that the major impediment is that you're probably going to need to have more than one dash cam, and it's going to cost you, you know, it's going to cost you a couple hundred bucks to set it up. But my goodness sakes, would it be awesome video evidence should you get hassled or worse by the cops? So I think it's a sign of the times, and I think it ties in very nicely with what you're saying.
Well, we're a little bit behind the times on the dash cam, not invention as much as innovation itself, Paul, because right now if you were to go over to Russia, there are at least a couple million Russians who have these dash cams because they know what corrupt police forces look like. So that they've been using these things by the millions, at least a couple millions in Russia, way before they had made it to mainstream here. So I guess, again, you got to follow the lead. If the full dash cam videos of these things were released when it comes to police brutality, a lot of people would change their minds.
I've watched a lot of YouTube videos, as you probably have as well, involving law enforcement stops. And I'm going to tell you, these dash cams or these cameras are major league intimidating devices to police who've got something nefarious on their mind.
Yep.
Now, I've also seen some YouTube videos where the cops weren't bothered by it, but the vast majority of YouTube videos are showing cops that absolutely don't want to be recorded. They do not want anything that they do be recorded. Now,
no, they don't,
again,
Paul. What do they always tell us? What do you got to hide if you're not doing anything wrong?
Exactly right. You are exactly right. So they are violating their own logic that they use when they do stops. If you're not hiding anything, let me search your vehicle. Okay,
yep.
You can search my vehicle, but I'm going to record you. No, I don't want you to record me.
Well, if you're not going to do anything wrong, you shouldn't mind, you know? Exactly. That's what they always tell us. And these police shootings like that of Miriam Carey, Paul, they're happening on a regular basis. I mean, her case may remain a local news story, even though that we didn't hear it on the national news after one day. I think it sure was ironic how it fell off the face of the earth when it came to mainstream media. But what about the shooting of Jack Lamar Robertson? If you remember this story, this is where just this past week he was shot and killed by police after his fiance had called 911 for an ambulance. And when they went to help him with an ambulance because his fiance was concerned about him, they say he was brandishing weapons, even though the police couldn't identify the weapons and they weren't guns. And later on, someone said allegedly it was a knife, and they claimed he was coming at them allegedly armed. So I'm thinking she probably regrets calling the police now about the health of her fiance because now he's dead.
Earlier in the week, here on the MVM network, I believe Ed Springsteen was talking about former chief of police, Louisville chief of police, Robert White, who's now in Denver, Colorado, was actively covering up a police officer involved incident. And I don't remember the details. I think you and him talked a little bit about it, but police chief White out in Denver refused to release the video of this police officer incident. We refused to release the video, even though it's public record. It's public record. So I think, again, that kind of ties in with what you're saying. Dale, I want to posit something here, okay? There's one interesting parallel to what you're talking about. Why isn't there more widespread protest and concern about the police misbehavior that seems to be on the increase? If you'll recall, back at the start of this country, didn't we have a very similar situation involving the British troops who were, in fact, the de facto police of the day?
Well, we
the
had
citizens
much,
then,
much similar situation,
the
and not only that, I've talked about this on the show. If you tie the police, which are government, back to our state, ultimately our federal government, they had a concern that was in some parts of our country today. Oh, I don't know, Idaho, Washington, Hawaii, Alaska. They had a government that was not even as far away from them as those U.S. citizens, to use that term in quotes, have to deal with how far the government is away from them and the things that they're doing to them. And it was over a lot less that they had a revolution.
Yeah. And that I see the situation that existed in pre-revolutionary colonial America to be very similar to what we have today. And also commensurate with that, Dale, I see people's attitudes very similar. For example, there were the group of revolutionaries that we now call patriots and founders, but there was also a fairly large number of people, percentage-wise anyway, that were sympathetic to the British overlords. You know, they called them
Tories. Well, if the government becomes too corrupt, Paul, and some of the stupid stuff that we've seen, and I wasn't going to get into the government shutdown, quote unquote, even though we know 80-some% of the government is still open. That name and that title, that catchphrase itself is a farce. But one of the funniest stories that I saw coming out today, and this shows me that there is, again, as I tell Springsteen and Martin, the other people on this network, there is a lot of hope for people, because when the government gets really, really stupid and really, really corrupt, people are going to say, to hell with this. And the story I'm using today, for example, was amongst the government shutdown when they're telling you not to go into these previously open parks. Even USA Today said now it's become catch us if you can. The shutdown rebels is what they're calling them, people who are quote-unquote pranksters who have had it with the government shutdown. And basically they're running because there's more of them than there are the government, and they're government officials at these monuments, some semi-private, some semi-public. They can't catch them all. Did you see this story today, Paul?
No, I didn't. But you know, that's almost somewhat similar to what happened in the 60s when all the civil rights protests were going on. They were, you know, open defiance of civil law, and the number of protesters clearly outnumbered the law enforcement people, and so they were able to kind of, you know, catch me if you can as well. But
I mean, there's
a
lot more of
so much,
quote unquote, us. If we want to use that term, there's a lot more of us if us be the subjects than there are of them if they be the government officials. So when these people are running and they're not getting away with anything, that's the whole thing. What are they getting away with? They just don't want to be oppressed for going to what is supposed to be open monuments. And it leads me right back into, you're right. We talked with Springsteen about all this government cover-up when it comes to these police forces. And we know that the federal government is very tied to the local government. To bring it back to local governments, this is another story I teased with Ed. You go to Coleman Police Department in Alabama, the Coleman Police Department, they now have, guess what? They have an armed military vehicle, or a $400,000, nearly a $500,000 armed vehicle that was given to them, quote unquote, free from the feds. And this is stuff that we've been reporting about in different parts of the country. Up in New Hampshire, they call it a Bearcat. And this one here is called the MRAP, the Mine Resistant Ambush Protected Surplus Vehicle. And basically, it's been given away, if you want to use that quote-unquote given free, because there's nothing free, there's always attachments, from the federal government to the local police department. So I ask again, as we see more local police departments getting these weapons, sometimes these are weapons that are coming back as the fallout, thankfully, of us getting some of our people out of harm's way in other countries where we're trying to nation build, or I would call democracy build or empire build. So some of these devices, unfortunately, are coming back over here, these big monster vehicles. You know, they want to call a vehicle that somebody drives, like the woman who was shot to death, a weapon. What do you call a local police department having a 40,000-pound armed vehicle? What need do they have for that, Paul?
You actually conjured up a delightfully funny scenario in my mind's eye. Think of it this way. What if there were a Barney Fife on all of these police departments?
Yeah.
Barney was the guy who was always advocating for all kinds of equipment and gear to take care of potential problems in the quiet little town of Mayberry.
Yeah.
And to me, that's the scenario, the parallel that I see, is that Cullman, Alabama is clearly not a metro area. And why they're getting it, God only knows. But the fact of the matter is that somebody down there, I think, has an awfully bad case of Barney Fifeism, okay? I think they've got a Barney Fife mentality.
I said they're free vehicles, Paul, because there's nothing free about them. We know how this works. They are
That's what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that, but it takes the Barney Fife mentality to say, hey, the government's got this vehicle. We really don't have a problem that would require this vehicle, but let's go get it anyway, you know?
Well, then there's going to be strings attached to it because of the feds. For some reason, let's just use conspiracy talk because, you know, there's people out there that say I'm just, you know, one of these paranoid conspiracy freaks if I dare stand up against the police force. You know, I love to sit around and hang out with the police and have a Krispy Kreme donut with them, which they enjoy so much. But again, they're too busy oppressing the people. Clair, Michigan is another small town of a few thousand people in the central part of Michigan, and they just got, guess what, fully armed Humvees with their police force. The department just took delivery of these last week, and you had to laugh out loud. This is a 10-man police department in Clair, Michigan. Now they have armed Humvees.
See, Barney Fife lives in Michigan, too. The spirit of Barney Fife lives on.
I agree, Paul. We're going to take the bottom of the hour break if you want to. Can you stick with us, Paul?
Yeah.
We'll be back. Call in if you want, folks. If you're already listening in and you want to get on the air, just push the 1 key on your phone. If you're not calling in yet, 858-683-1326. We'll be back.
Well, I moved into this room, if you could call it that, a week ago. I never do what I'm supposed to do, hardly even know my name anymore. When no one calls it out, kind of vanishes away. And I can't get to sleep at night, the parking lot so loud and bright. The AC hasn't worked in 20 years, probably never made it. I can't say the same to me, I've done it many times. Somebody take me home through those Alabama pines. You can't drive through Talladega on a weekend in October, head up north to Jackson. Somebody take me home.
So you're driving down the road, minding your own business, and bam, something hits your windshield and leaves a ding or even worse. Has this happened to you? Don't worry, folks. Help is here. Huntsman Auto Glass is family-owned and operated right here in Louisville. Huntsman Auto Glass only uses original equipment manufacturer replacement glass, and in most cases, any repair or replacement is paid for by your auto insurance. That's right. No deductible, no cost to you. Call Huntsman Auto Glass at 502-214-8566 or go to huntsmanautoglass.com for more info. Huntsman Auto Glass, where they will fix your smash in a flash. Tell them Ed sent you.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
And we're back again, folks, here on the TNT Radio Show, the Miami Matters Radio Network. Of course, we went into the break there with Jason Isbell in Alabama Pines. And we actually opened up tonight with Poker Face, Rather Die Than Be Your Slave. And Poker Face, of course, will be back here visiting with us at the Knob Creek machine gun shoot this weekend. So getting back to government machine guns and government police forces, we had our good friend Paul on the line from Stop Invisible Taxes. And Paul, are you still with us?
I am, Dale.
Well, Paul, going to the break, I thought it was interesting that you brought up the whole camera and the dash cams out there. And we know that that's becoming a more popular trend here, thankfully, where people want to track the trackers. Somebody's got to watch the watchers. And it kind of reminded me, there's a website, Paul, I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's called Photography Is Not a Crime.
No, I haven't heard of that one.
Carlos Miller runs a website called Photography Is Not a Crime. And I want to get your some of your impact on this since you brought up the dash cam, because Carlos does a thing over on his page. Probably about a couple months ago he did this, and it was the 10 rules for recording cops and other authority figures. And the very first rule he uses, or he advocates, is number one, learn how to use the camera. And he says if you're serious about citizen journalism, he seriously recommends you invest in a camera other than just what you have on your smartphone. Now, we know that this is where a lot of these stories, and like you said, pictures show up on YouTube and the moving pictures because of people's camera phones. But he talks about how, you know, you should really get out there and get a professional camera, if you will, to have prepared, or if you got the money and the resources to do one of these dash cams. But Carlos follows that up by saying number two and three rules are the cops are asking you questions that are illegal. You got to learn to keep your mouth shut, but not be afraid to ask the cops questions. Do you think he's onto something here, Paul?
Oh, Dale, that is actually critical for something like that. The folks who are concerned about being hassled or perhaps even arrested by cops, they're going to learn how to do this, okay? Because they're already attuned to this issue, and they're going to teach themselves, and they're going to do their requisite amount of studying in order to try to avoid that. But every once in a while, despite all of that studying and all that preparation, you're going to get a rogue cop, okay? And you were talking about the incident in D.C. where the cops used this woman's breaking away from them in an automobile as justification to use deadly force. That brings me to another point I wanted to just run by you.
Yep.
I've known a number of cops, some of them better than others. I often wonder, Dale, if down deep in the psyche of almost every cop, if there isn't this overwhelming desire to shoot somebody.
I mean, some people say that's kind of speculative on our behalf, but my thing is you've got to be careful, and you've got to protect yourself, because they made it clear, hell, even Supreme Court cases have made it clear, they're not out there to protect me and you. I know we've talked about this on airways. They're out there to protect the corporation, and I've even told people, look, there is a big line. It's not a thin blue line, no pun intended, but there's a big, thick line between respecting police and still be willing to ask questions of them, like Carlos says here on Photography is Not a Crime, be willing to question their behavior, maybe question them personally if they have you pulled over. There's a big difference between being questioned and then you come back and, oh, well, if you're questioning the police, well, then you're anti-police. No, there's a big, big, thick line between respecting the police and what their rights are and their quote-unquote powers are supposed to be, but then on the flip side, coming back and also having people who worship the police. I mean, I'm always going to fall in the former category of those who will respect them but question them, then instead of the ones who just think that you can do whatever you want. I mean, help us if the bad thoughts of people in badges and guns, like you just said, what if everybody who's driving a car had bad thoughts? Should they be shot without question?
Well, again, that goes to the central point of me bringing up that point about down deep, does every cop have this secret desire to shoot somebody? Because
you have to wonder.
In the D.C. incident, the woman was not brandishing any weapon of any sort.
No.
But when she got in her car and she bolted from them because of her mental illness, all those cops on that particular call instantly decided that that was enough to use deadly force.
In other
words,
it was open
now
to
I got
her
a
black
chance.
Ass. Yeah.
Now
it was
I
open
got a chance
her
to
black
sh-
ass at
shoot
that point.
Somebody.
Yeah.
Well,
no,
I'm not sure that
boy.
It was a racial thing. Yeah.
I don't know. But, I just heard that they were all white, the police officers. And again, as I said at the top of the show, where were the protests and the outrages and the marches and the demonstrations and the sit-ins? Because we had a big, long to-do about when a man who was partially Jewish and partially Hispanic defended his neighborhood against a young black teenager, and that was somehow a black-white thing, but this isn't a black-white thing?
I consider it to be a cop versus everybody else thing in D.C.
Right.
Because
and if
DC
she's a mentally
is,
ill
DC's
person,
primarily...
if she's allegedly mentally ill, Paul, and she's gotten in there, and we know they have these barricades after 9/11 that they can pop up remotely controlled, almost, hell, they were the original drones that could pop up at any point. They just didn't fly around like drones. And she's mentally ill, and all of a sudden, you see these spikes coming out of the ground at your vehicle, and you and your child are in the car, and you're surrounded by police. Is that not going to frighten you to run away?
Well, that's a form of provocation, Dale. That's kind of what I'm getting at, is that cops will use almost anything as a provocation and then subsequently use deadly force and justify it that they were provoked into doing it.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's why I say at the core of most cops is this overwhelming desire to shoot another human being. Because, Dale, without the overt display of weaponry by this woman, where the cops could have said, this just doesn't feel right, it doesn't look right, she's not really overtly threatening me, they could have said, there's something else going on. But instead, they reverted instantly to this desire to go shoot somebody.
Well, but Paul, what Carlos says on Photography is Not a Crime, and we know, and we've talked about on the show before, there was even a book written out there that I need to look at and recommend to people called 3 Felonies a Day. We know that we are never going to know all their laws because you would need a group of lawyers a lifetime to read all the laws on their books. So we know what they do is purely speculative. We know what they do is purely subjective. It's not objective because they can't arrest everybody. I don't want to give them any ideals. But they can't arrest everybody for breaking all the rules because then everybody would be in a cage. And we already got whatever the large percentage of people in a cage in this quote-unquote free country. But what Carlos says, and I think might be a little bit more difficult, he says learn the laws about public property, learn the laws about private property, and he says learn the laws about government facilities and your state's wiretapping laws. Is the common person going to be able to learn all that?
They have the ability, Dale, but here's the problem is that commensurate with wanting to learn all of that, the way our society is structured, everybody is out there busy surviving these days.
You got it.
Okay. They want to keep a good roof over their head. They want to keep food on the table. They want to keep clothes on the kids' back. They want to keep utility bills paid. And plus, they want to have an enjoyable life.
Yeah.
For them to suggest that we need to go out and learn all the codes, all the regulations is simply not realistic, because they themselves, the very people who suggest that shit, and I'm going to call it shit because that's what it is, they're not practicing what they're preaching. So,
well, I can say this. Carlos is writing this, and Carlos has been out there practicing his preaching because he's out there with a camera. He's got arrested a bunch of times, but
difference. No. I'm saying that the establishment who's out there telling everybody.
Yeah, they don't have to follow their own laws. We talked about the Springsteen show last night, the story here in a suburb of Louisville, over in the Audubon area, where their police department allegedly fired a guy because he was gay, and then they claimed that they did it because he supposedly had violated 50-some different rules. And I think you even got in on that about how the hell people...
Listen. Ed, I think, sometimes likes to argue just to argue. But you and I were in full agreement. 57
sure.
rules violations, whether they occurred all at once or more than likely, they were accumulated over a period
right.
of time.
Right.
And then they were brought out at the time that the establishment said, all right, uh-huh. we've had enough of this guy. You know, it's time
and
to dump him.
And that's the point. It was all in his file. That's the point, Paul.
Yeah.
It was all in his file. So when they decided that, you just said it, they had had enough of him, then they could pull it out, and they can do that with every one of us, quote-unquote, citizens. I guess a better term would be subjects. They can pull it out on our file. And I knew you were talking about the police and not Carlos, but he's just saying, if you're going to be out there, and I guess, you know, some people, some demographics are more naturally skeptical of law enforcement than others, but he says, again, you need to research this stuff based on what state or county you live in. Sometimes it's something that can be done with a few keystrokes, and then he says the truth is, the laws have not caught up with technology yet, so it's up to us to set the standard before the state tries to set the standard, so we can ensure the government remains as transparent as possible. Is that doable?
Not without some type of revolution right now, Dale. I think we've gone past the point of no return in terms
mm-hmm.
of getting the current way of things being done, getting it reformed. Because
yep.
I honestly believe the bad guys are pretty firmly entrenched. And as we've seen around the world, when bad guys get firmly entrenched, it's a royal pain to get them out. It takes massive effort. So
you're talking about the bad
sure.
guys who are wearing the badges.
Well, there's a number of them as well. I draw a parallel. You're focused on police agencies here in the United States.
Tonight I am, yeah. I'm focused on police agencies. That pisses a lot of people off because we won't lick their jackboots. But
yeah.
they are part of the government. Go ahead.
That's correct. And I look at it also. I don't see a whole lot of difference in the behavior of police agencies as I do with government agencies.
Well, that's
really
right,
don't.
But people somehow think that they're on their side because back when they were a kid, 20, 30, 40 years ago, maybe the local police were more on their side. And, hey, I can go back to the John Birch Society who said support your local police, but keep them local. And that's the whole thing. We just talked about these Bearcat devices that they bring in from the feds that they have no business using because, like you said, they got this Barney Fife thing going on. And then they bring it in anyway, and then they are just as bad as the elected politicians. The difference is, we can't even vote them out, Paul. I mean, we can't get people to vote out the elected sons of bitches. How in the world are you going to do anything about the appointed work-and-file sons of bitches?
It's going to take some type of revolution.
I got one other story that if you haven't heard tonight, Paul, I'm glad you stuck with us here, all Stop Invisible Taxes. If you haven't heard this story, this one should outrage people. I put this one on the social networks, and I'm still floored by what doesn't offend people anymore because it's like Stockholm Syndrome. People are just so accustomed to it. But tell me if you heard this story, Paul. Riverside, California police. Does that ring a bell yet?
Not yet.
Okay. This past week, Riverside, California police trick autistic teenagers into buying pot. I mean, is that about the lowest of the low? And the subheading, and I want to get into the story, not only did the Riverside, California police trick an autistic teen into buying pot, but they ended up taking down 22 different I guess you call them kids or children, special needs kids, and they took them to jail. They arrested them, Paul. This story, again, Reason Magazine is breaking some of the best news about the state these days. Cousin Nick Gillespie, as I call him, over there at Reason. And basically what happened here, people can go look at this, reason.com. Riverside cop tricks autistic teen into buying pot. And this was like a real-life 21 Jump Street situation where this undercover cop was in this operation called Operation Glass House, and he was out there in these high schools in the Temecula Valley and Rancho Vista continuation out in California, and he would pose as a high school student, and he would befriend these handicapped students in order to try to trick them into selling them pot. What do you say about a story like that?
Well, I've got a working premise these days also that involves organized crime, okay?
Yeah.
And the organized crime premise that I have thought about a little bit and come to the realization that since we haven't heard a whole lot of national media coverage of any organized crime stories for the better part of 20 years, that must mean that the organized crime element has succeeded in taking over the government. And Dale, if you sit there and you take a look at actions like this, the only purpose that something like that would serve is to send a message to the community. That those types of kids, whether they're doing something that they shouldn't be doing or not, and whether they're doing it knowingly, they're just an unbelievably easy target.
Well, I think it's one thing if you target them. I think it's one thing if you target kids. And I don't agree in the war on drugs anyway, because hell, look how successful it's been. It's right up there with the war on poverty and the war on terror. I mean, as we see, all we should really do with the border, with the U.S.-Mexican border, hell, we ought to declare it a national park, and then we can shut it down, right? That's where it works.
There you go. I think you've come up with a solution, Dale.
We just shut down we declare the line between the U.S. and Mexico a national park. And then they have to shut it down because the government shut down and nobody will be allowed there. They're so worried about World War II and Vietnam vets going and seeing their own memorials, but they don't do a damn thing about the border. And I'm not even somebody who's big on, quote-unquote, illegal immigration, because I don't blame these people for wanting a better lives. But when you target handicapped kids, autistic, challenged, whatever the politically correct term is, and you know that these kids, this little boy that they target, I call him a little boy because he doesn't have the mentality of a normal teenager. He basically went out and sought out homeless men to get the drugs to please his quote-unquote new friend who turned out to be a police. So he went out and got drugs off the street to bring him back because he thought he had made a friend, and his friend kept hassling him about how he needed marijuana for his pain, which I should tell you something, marijuana helps pain. They even use that to trick people into it because it does help pain from what we've been told. Allegedly, I don't know, but that's what I've been told. And this kid had a list of disabilities that many in the community wondered why was he being targeted in this undercover drug operation. And the fake friend, who was a police officer, at one point sent up to 60 text messages a day begging for this autistic boy to help him find pot.
Easy targets. They're easy targets. And Dale, I guess it's the next best thing to shooting a human being is that they're getting their.
I guess they gotta have a hobby
doing this kind of thing. Yeah.
I guess they gotta have a hobby, Paul. And they ended up taking down 22 special needs kids. Ended up getting arrested. So that's. I guess this makes them feel better at night. I don't know how they sleep at night that the police department in Riverside went out and took 22. Mentally handicapped children and arrested them over pot. That's what it's come to in this country, Paul. Ain't it a great free country?
All I can say, Dale, is that your sign-off line has a lot of merit.
We appreciate your comments, Paul. We're running out of time here. We're definitely glad that you weighed in here. And this is what I'm talking about, folks. This was a autistic boy who had just moved into a new neighborhood. And his son had just begun a senior year at his school. And he rarely socialized, so his parents were thrilled when he, quote-unquote, had made a new friend in art class. And it was a real-life 21 Jump Street bullshit situation. So, yes, we did what we promised we were going to do, which we spent the entire show focusing on that part of the government that is law enforcement. Remember, it used to be peace officers. They used to be called peace officers, and they were supposed to protect and serve. Now they're enforcing the laws subjectively that they don't want you to break. And if you break them and you're their buddy, well, they might look out for you for a while. But if you're not their buddy, God help you, because they're going to come after you. And again, so many people will think, oh, you're being anti-police. You don't understand. No, I know. I have friends and family who are in law enforcement, and it's just bullshit when you came off with this stuff saying that I don't know what I'm talking about. Because I do know what I'm talking about, and there's a big, fat line between, we're talking about the blue line, there's a big, fat blue line between respecting law enforcement but questioning them, questioning authority, and those who just bend down backwards and kiss the ass, and then they turn around and lick the boots of law enforcement. And we believe in we the people. We don't believe in we the government. We believe in we the people. And like I said, if these people get appointed, if these people get elected, if these people get hired, and they're in the government, this is far worse than any government shutdown. I don't worry about the government shutdown, folks. I know there's things that people depend on the government for, but let's look at the truth about the matter. There are far fewer problems with a government shutdown than there are benefits from the government shutdown. Just think if you took every bit of those federal dollars that are raped from you because they are taken from you under threat of arrest. Just think if you took all those federal dollars and gave them back to you, and then you could help the people who you hear these sob stories, because there are sob stories, who need the government to help them. The government is going to give you a crutch after they break your leg and say, aren't you glad we gave you a crutch? And this is what we're talking about. People prefer this crap. No, they don't, because we know the fact is, even NPR did a survey that said Americans prefer hemorrhoids and cockroaches to Congress, because hemorrhoids and cockroaches do a lot less harm to you than Congress. Whether it be government torture, whether it be war crimes, whether it be down to this beat that a cop has, where they take it out on a person without an arm, without a weapon, we'll never know what happens when somebody's dead, because they're dead. And then they go and ransack their home and search them to make sure that they're not a terrorist. This should be pissing you off, folks. I know a lot of you it doesn't, because you're too busy with your bread and circuses. You're too busy paying all the legalized stuff that we call taxes. You're too busy with all the government indoctrination. But this should be pissing you off. This should be enough in the end to make you go up to the elected officials, stand up in their face, and say death to your new world order. Have a good night, folks.
Well, they're here. I locked the door, but I can see them through the window. One of them is waving at me to shut down. I'm giving him the finger. I'll shut down when I'm goddamn good and ready.
I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.